This is Betty Turnell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. Our guest today is Dr. H.J. Burstein, who is known to his friends as Amy. Well, Dr. Burstein, have you lived in Decatur all your life?
Good morning, Mrs. Turnell. No, we moved here from Chicago in 1912. I was born in Chicago in 1905, and we moved to Decatur in 1912. And I've been a resident of Decatur ever since, so I've lived here practically all my life.
Was Decatur a good place to grow up in those days?
I believe so. I've had all of my education in the city except for the years when I was attending college and medical school. As a youngster, I don't think there was anything unusual about my education, although I did go to the old Marietta School, to the Gassman and the Wood Street School, now the Mary W. French. The teacher I remember as being the finest of them all was Sarah Mark Imboden, who has been a legend in Decatur and was the principal of Gassman School.
And you finished your high school here?
Yes, I went to Decatur High School, graduated in 1922, and then attended Millikan. I was uncertain as to whether I wished to pursue a music career. I started taking violin lessons in the old Masonic Temple building, now the site of the Citizens Bank building, where we are having this interview this morning. My first violin teacher was Professor Niece, a very capable musician. He played cornet in the Goodman Band, and I believe he taught everything but the harp, in quotations. Amongst other activities, he was the organist at St. Patrick's Catholic Church for years. I remember as a youngster performing with him in the loft of the church.
So you really had a good start in music.
That's correct. I think I did. As a junior in high school, I studied violin at Millikan University with Miss Florence Brown. The head of the conservatory at that time was Dr. Max von Leuenswarthout, and the two men who were the directors of the Conservatory of Music were Drs. Max and his brother D.M. Swarthout, who amongst other things organized the Decatur Oratorial Choir. After leaving Decatur, D.M. went to the University of Kansas, where he was dean of the School of Fine Arts. Max Swarthout later went to California and pursued his musical career. He had studied violin with Arthur Nikisch, I believe in Leipzig, and was a fine violinist.
So there was a lot of music in Decatur at that time.
I believe musical activity was about on a par at the time.
But these were the people, and these were the people who promoted it?
That is correct. As a matter of fact, they promoted a two-day festival in Decatur at that time. The festival was held at the Lincoln Square Theater, and they rented the theater the first day, the New York Symphony, not the present-day New York Philharmonic as we know it. The conductor was Stransky, and he was assisted by Henry Hadley, who premiered his composition, the tone poem Salon. The following day, they had the Minneapolis Symphony conducted by Max Oberhofer, and the Minneapolis Orchestra at that time came to Decatur perennially. The concertmeister was Chervanky, a brilliant violinist. It was an interesting weekend. In addition to the orchestral numbers, they accompanied the Decatur Oratorio Choir with D.M. Swarthout conducting. While it was a nice event culturally, financially it was a bust.
You didn't stay in music as a career.
Well, at the end of my freshman year at Millikan, I was in liberal arts and was pursuing my violin studies, but knowing I would not be a virtuoso, I decided to go to medical school. I had been interested in medicine younger. During my high school days, I was an apprentice pharmacist at one of our local pharmacies.
Then you went on to graduate school.
I took my first year pre-med at Millikan along with my musical activities and then transferred to the University of Illinois for my second year of pre-medic. At that time, you only were required to take 2 years of pre-medical liberal arts education. Then I attended the University of Illinois College of Medicine in Chicago. now termed the Abraham Lincoln School of Medicine. This school is the parent school of our state medical schools, except for Southern.
And that launched you on your career there?
That was my start in medicine.
Well, how did you happen to choose the field of dermatology?
I had an internship at the Cook County Hospital, which was an 18-month service at that time. The average internship was only a year. 18 months gave you considerable more training, and my internship, and following my internship, I had a residency at the Cook County Hospital, which was a combination of urology and dermatology. Venereal diseases were much more prevalent at the time, and a good bit of the service consisted of the treatment of venereal diseases.
Well, tell us what you did after that.
Well, when I came to Decatur to practice, I was doing dermatology, urology, and was also a district health superintendent, which was a position under the auspices of the State of Illinois Health Department. At the time, this was in the Depression in 1933, they had abolished the Division of Venereal Diseases because of inadequate funds, and VD was a branch of communicable disease. I had an area of 5 or 6 counties for assigned investigations of communicable diseases, and along with that, I directed the venereal disease clinic at Decatur Memorial Hospital. This clinic had been started after World War I by Drs. Robert Morris and Dr. I.H. Neese of Decatur.
And then?
I was also in private practice at that time. I started my practice in the Citizens Building, and I've been here all the years I've been in practice.
Well, what do you especially remember about your early practice?
Well, the things I remember most were the long hours. We had night hours at least twice a week, and then we made many house calls in those days.
Well, those must have been quite arduous hours.
The hours were lengthy, and it meant spending a lot of time going back and forth, seeing patients at home, making daily rounds on hospital patients, and attending your office practice.
And you probably had long hours at that time.
Oh, sure. Office hours were often from 8:30 in the morning to late afternoon, and many doctors had hours 2 nights a week. We would see patients much later in the afternoon than presently.
Well, with all this work you were involved in, I often wonder how doctors keep up with advances in their profession. How did you keep abreast of innovations and treatment, new treatment?
You are correct. Mainly you have to keep abreast of the current medical literature.
You squeeze that into your spare time?
Well, you do most of that at night. Whether you're busy or not in your earlier years, there isn't much inclination to do much reading during your office hours. You're waiting to have patients. Over the years, the major journals in dermatology have been the Archives of Dermatology, published by the American Medical Association, the British Journal of Dermatology, the Journal of the Society of Investigative Dermatology, and the comparatively new dermatological journal called Cutis. And over the years, in addition to my practice and keeping abreast of the literature, I've had 5 or 6 articles on uncommon or comparatively rare skin disorders published in Cutis.
I believe you had one just recently, didn't you?
That's correct. The current issue of Cutis has published a case report I read at a meeting of the Noah Worcester Dermatologic Society. Brace yourself for this title. Angiolymphoid hyperplasia with eosinophilia.
Well, I couldn't even pronounce the title, and let alone understand the articles they represent. I'm sure you were very busy then.
Well, I do most of that at night.
You haven't retired, Dr. Burstein?
Retirement is a strange thing. I don't think most individuals ever know just when they will retire. For instance, the things that enter into retirement are problematical. First of all, it depends on an individual's health, and secondly, continued interest in what he's doing. Then attending medical meetings to get the prescribed amount of credit in the continuing medical education, as the program is now called, for relicensing in the practice of medicine. And also there's the possibility in the next few years that they will require recertification in a specialty. So you have to keep abreast of the newer developments in dermatology by reading and attending meetings. But as far as actual retirement is concerned, that's a difficult thing to state. I don't think I know when I'm going to retire any more than you do at this moment.
But I'm already retired. I retired because somebody told me to.
Well, so far no one has told me to. When someone suggests that I retire, I may do so.
You're in the very happy position of being your own man, so you don't have to have anyone telling you when you reach a certain year you have to stop working.
That's one of the great advantages of being a solo practitioner. That is, there is no such thing as mandatory retirement if you are fortunate enough to stay well.
And you seem to be in great health.
I believe I am.
I believe you told me you exercise every morning.
I walk.
Now your office is filled with a number of pictures and articles and little mementos of your career, and some of them represent honors and distinctions you have received.
Well, briefly stated, over the years I've been president of the staffs of both of our local hospitals, Decatur Memorial and St. Mary's. I'm a past president of the Decatur Medical Society. I've been a vice president of the Chicago Dermatologic Society, and my favorite society is the Noah Worster Dermatologic Society. That was founded at the University of Cincinnati about 22 years ago. Originally, it consisted of the faculty and former residents of the University of Cincinnati, which has always been an excellent training center in dermatology. And then you might want to know who Noah Worster was.
Well, I do.
Noah Worster was the first dermatologist to practice in the Ohio Valley, and he wrote the first American textbook in dermatology. And that is why the society was named the Noah Worster Dermatologic Society. It is now a national society, and we have approximately 150 members.
So they do go outside of the Cincinnati area now.
We are an accredited national society.
And you've had other distinctions, too.
I was president of this society 7 years ago.
So you do know how to wield a gavel.
I think so, yes.
Speaking of gavels, I noticed this picture of a young boy with a gavel. Is this your grandson carrying on the family tradition?
That is my grandson. I don't know what he will do, but he is getting a nice education in the north side, suburban Chicago, and is a student at New Trier East. He is working hard. He's a freshman in high school with an excellent scholastic record.
You have other grandchildren too, I believe.
I also have four granddaughters who are younger than he.
Well, you've already mentioned your music. You never did give it up, did you?
No, I still practice periodically, and I always seem to practice most when I am playing with the Milligan Orchestra. I think I'm the only person in captivity who has played the first and the last Milligan Orchestra programs. A number of years ago, I read in our newspaper that 50 years ago, the Milligan Orchestra had played their first public concert. I played in it. I was in the violin section, and at that time, the conductor was one of the professors of music at Milligan, Frank Heidinger, and that was in 1920. And I have also been able to play with the orchestra this year.
Well, good. Now, you've already mentioned that your instrument is a violin. Do you have any special remembrance of your years with the orchestra?
Well, while I was in high school, Milligan University had their first interscholastic high school competition, and I played in that. There were three judges, Mr. Edward Powers, who was Decatur's great patron of the arts. At one time, I believe he commented that he had heard Aida 310 times. Do you remember him? And Professor Minor Walden Gallup of the piano faculty, and Professor W.B. Olds, who was head of the voice department at Milligan.
And those are all well-loved names here in Decatur. Well, do you have any other interests besides music?
I play golf. During the summer months, I try to play twice a week, but I'm strictly an amateur.
But you enjoy it.
Very much.
Now, you've already mentioned your grandchildren. Do you have any other memories of your family that you want to bring out?
Well, my father, Ben, originally came to Decatur. He was in the clothing and tailoring business, but then he was in love with the tavern business. For the old-timers like you and I, we probably remember Ben's Barn, a very popular restaurant until about a dozen years ago, and that was my father's business.
Well, what impressions do you have of Decatur over the years?
All I can say is that Decatur is a fine city to live in, to work in, to practice in, and I've always said that Decatur has been kind to me.
Well, it certainly seems to have been. Do you think there's been any deterioration of life in Decatur?
No, I don't think so. In spite of all the controversy about downtown and the mall and Hickory Point, I think there will always be a downtown Decatur, and the Decatur will continue to be a fine city to live in.
And so you're optimistic about the future?
I most certainly am. I think there are all kinds of opportunities in medicine, law, marketing, that seems to be in the bandwagon, and other professions.
And for your grandchildren?
That is correct. I have two sons, but neither one of them desired coming to Decatur to practice.
Well, are they both in medicine?
My older son is a psychiatrist who practices in Chicago, and my younger son does labor law for a large firm in the city.
Well, they probably come to visit.
Sure. I think we have covered most of the points. But let me look at my notes. I mentioned the venereal disease clinic, which was quite an important thing in Decatur at that time. We had a caseload of 75 to 100 patients to treat on Monday and Friday mornings.
Well, it's encouraging to hear you say that you think that problem has diminished.
That is correct.
Is there anything else you would like to add? You like to travel, don't you?
I enjoy traveling, and we usually take a summer vacation and spend it with our children. During the winter months, I like to take a minimum of 2 or occasionally 4 weeks and visit some balmy place to get away from the winter weather, especially the type of weather we've had this year. In addition to the things I've mentioned, I do enjoy just listening to classical music.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Burstein. We wish you many more years of service and enjoyment. You have been listening to the reminiscences of Dr. H.J. Burstein, recorded for the Decatur Public Library. This is Betty Trunell speaking.